I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, podcast time. It's the Alt in Our Stars, Billboard's rock and alternative and punk whatever podcast. My name is Chris Payne. I'm your host. This week's episode is with a band called Big Ups. They've been around for a little while now. They formed in NYU in New York City a few years back. They all came together from different parts of the country and Canada in this music technology course, but what they finally settled on collaborating was this punk band called Big Ups, which they're about to roll out their second album. Actually, it comes out today, March 4th, if you're listening to this on the first day the podcast is out there. It's called Before a Million Universes. And I had a really good time chatting with these four guys. Like I said, they came together kind of loosely playing in different bands, started Big Ups as this thing to play friends' parties, play smaller kind of venues. At first, didn't really take it seriously as sort of like a serious project or anything like that. But a few years after that, they were playing in a Belgian festival to about 6,000 people, something we talk about in this podcast. So things in a lot of ways ramped up pretty quickly for these guys, and it was really interesting hearing them say how that all happened. So yeah, this is Big Ups and Alt in Our Stars. And before we start, I just want to say that if you want to subscribe to the podcast, if you enjoy this, maybe it's your first time listening, you can subscribe to the podcast by clicking the iTunes link towards the bottom of the story if you're viewing this on billboard.com. There you can subscribe, like I said. If you can give us a star rating, give us feedback, that helps a lot with everything we do. And also you can listen to archived episodes there. All the episodes we've done, we've been doing this for a little over a year now, so there's a ton of stuff there. Some recent stuff we've had, Chairlift, Yaysayer, Rah Rah Riot, Downtown Boys on the podcast, so plenty to dig in there in the archives. And if another way you can get into all that stuff, aside from clicking the link, if you're not viewing this on billboard.com, you can just go into iTunes and the podcast app and search for The Alt in Our Stars. That is the name of the show. Up next, interview with Big Ups. Enjoy. So, hey, we're podcasting here at Billboard with Big Ups. Thanks for coming by, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I know that you guys all have different schedules. Some of you guys took off from work. Some of you guys are off. What did it take for everyone to make it here today?
Definitely a lie.
Yep.
What was the lie?
I had a dentist appointment.
Oh, that's a good lie.
Yeah.
It's a good lie for getting out of daytime things. I think there was one time when I was really little when I was trying to get out of like baseball practice or something, and it was at night, and I tried to use a dentist appointment, and it was really awkward because it just like didn't make any sense.
24-hour dentistry. There's a hole in the market.
Try to go like the convenient omission route where it's like, I have an appointment. I'm not going to say it's a doctor
prior
or dentist,
engagement.
But, exactly. Yeah, it's a thing that I have to do.
I've taken these things pretty far, though. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I've definitely pushed it with taking days off and things. This one job, I just said I had an emergency, and I just like looked at my boss in the eye, and I was like, "It's very real." I was very vague.
And you just went with that?
Yeah, and he was like, "Go, get out of here. Go, do your thing."
Well, I mean, you would have to be a certain kind of boss to double down on that and, like, want facts.
Exactly. I knew he wasn't.
You knew he wasn't going to call you on that.
Exactly. It was perfect. Seamus, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Yeah, before we go further, how about introduce yourselves and say what you do in the band?
I'm Carlos, and I play bass.
I'm Brendan, I play drums.
I'm Joe, I'm the vocalist.
I'm Amar, and I play the guitar.
So it's the second time you guys are putting out an album into the world, and the second time doing promotion around it. How's it different? What's it like this time?
In some ways, I feel like, personally, I feel more prepared because I know what to expect, but I also feel less prepared in the sense that, like, kind of the first go around when we came out with a record, it was everything that happened felt like so serendipitous, and so I didn't really personally like think like, oh, like this is ever going to happen again, sort of. It felt I wasn't anticipating it, but now that I know that press is coming, I'm like, oh, I don't know how to talk about this stuff really. So it before it kind of was like a surprise, like, oh, talk about the record, and I hadn't really like gotten anxious about having to speak about it. And now I feel like now that I knew it was all coming, that we're going to put out a record again, and that people are most likely going to want to talk about it, yeah, as we're doing right now. Exactly. It's certainly a little bit more like, it feels like there's a little bit more pressure, I guess, to get it right. But hey, we're all here. We're going to talk about it.
You're doing a good job so far.
Thanks.
It sounds like you're picking up on how the media likes to put a narrative when they talk about a new release.
That is a big thing that I've thought about a lot with coming out with this record, because I'm not sure if I know what our narrative is really. So, it's I think it's interesting to see how like the media, with just bands in general, how there's always sort of like the story and why you should care and everything like that. So, trying to figure out what is our story. I think we're like still figuring that out ourselves. Perhaps. I don't know. I don't want to speak for everybody, but that's how I feel.
No, that's true.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely harder for bands the second time around, because so much of music press, for better or worse, just goes towards like new artists with their first record. So I think there is like something you can kind of hang your hat on, like, yeah, it's the second album and we're doing it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Before you guys formed at NYU, did you all come from Baltimore?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Just me wearing the Baltimore hat for you radio listeners.
So where'd you all come from?
Yeah, we're all kind of spread out. I'm from Buffalo. Carl's from Connecticut.
And I grew up in Canada.
Where in Canada?
Ottawa.
Okay.
It's okay. The capital that very few people seem to know is the capital.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you threw me on the spot right there, it's like I know it's not Toronto or Montreal, but I'm not sure I would have said Ottawa right away.
Yeah, somewhere geographically in between the two. But yeah.
So you guys came from a bunch of different places, and the band's initial home base where it formed was at NYU. Yeah. And you guys all met each other in a class, right?
Yeah, we were all in the same program at school, which was a relatively small program. So I think, you know, we're all, Carlos, Joe and I are all the same year in Amar, so you're younger, but he stayed the longest. He's the other one who's
most
master's.
Educated.
Yeah, the most educated of all. But yeah, we all met like in the program, so we had a bunch of classes together, and even if we didn't, we kind of had to see a lot of each other.
There's a lot of like hanging out on there. So there's this one building. Was it 35 West 4th?
Yeah, yeah. And a single floor of that.
Yeah.
Which
okay.
Was our home base.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like recording studios because we did music technology. And so everybody just kind of hung out on that floor if they didn't have class. And so that was like where pretty much all of the socializing I did in college took place, I'd say. It was like on that floor. So
a few floors with a couple couches. You can like sit or nap and hang out. So.
Yeah.
Because probably people come from all different parts of the city to go to class. It takes a lot of time to go back and come back and forth for class. So people stay there on the floor. It just becomes a thing.
Bonding. Exactly.
And people also work there on the floor, like maintaining the studios. So they hang. Like Carlos worked there.
I mean, worked is like
very loose. Yeah, so it's a lot of hanging and some working. You know?
A lot of napping going on.
And music technology was the name of the program.
Yes.
Okay. So from getting from that, where did you guys all come into punk? Because it seems like you guys appreciate all different kinds of music in order to be like interested in a program like that. So what drew each of you to punk music and wanting to be in that kind of a band?
Well, when I guess like I started personally listening to that like punk like in middle school, and you know, just like different, you know, styles of music in general kind of like opened up. And then I think I started going to shows when I was in high school as well, and like I was always drawn to the punk bands because of their energy and the performance aspect of it, and that was kind of always the original plan for this band. Well, first of all, there really wasn't much of a plan, but the idea was it was very limited in scope. It was like, we're just gonna play shows, and like, I mean, we were a band for like 3 years before we ever put out a record. You know, we've been you know, we did like a 2 7-inches, so that's like what, 4 songs, like we didn't really like, it was never like it was way more about the performance. And so that, I think that's part of the reason why that was like kind of the chosen medium. And I remember like Amar and I, we would go to shows like I remember going to see like Future Islands and Double Dagger at Death by Audio, which was
the second time I'd ever been to Death by Audio.
Yeah, so that was you know, like kind of like watching bands that perform, like both of those bands do, was a big inspiration for probably being like, all right, well, it's going to be this kind of a band. I don't think that necessarily, you know, like you said, I think that all of us like other kinds of music so much, and we all play other kinds of music as well. Like, you know, everybody's kind of working on their own separate things that are, you know, but this is kind of how this band came about. It was like I said, I feel like it was so like not thought out really. It was like, let's make a band that goes and plays shows and has a lot of energy and a lot of fun. And that's like what it was. And it, I never would have thought that we'd still be playing like nearly 6 years later, you know, like it's actually,
we started with a song called No Plan.
Yeah. And that was one of our first songs. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, in Ottawa, where I grew up, like, starting to go to shows, that was a lot of what the shows were there. It's always kind of like a running joke, but also kind of true that the music in Ottawa and to an extent in the surrounding cities is like a couple years behind the U.S., but less so now because of the internet. But I went to a lot of ska shows in high school, and it was like the fourth or fifth Ska Is Not Dead tour. So ska is kind of dead at that point, but it's, you know, they're still doing the Ska Is Not Dead.
Still living in Ottawa.
Yeah, exactly. So there were a lot of like punk and ska shows, a lot of like actually a surprising amount of crust punks for a government city. Like a lot of rudimentary peony t-shirts and a lot of like drinking 40 ounces under a bridge type punks, you know? Mm. But I think that just like having something to do that wasn't hanging out with people from high school was just, you know, that gave you a sense of community in the city. And then coming here and trying to find that here, just being drawn, not necessarily to punk bands here, because I don't know that any of us like do the New York's All Right thing or any of the hardcore thing. So more just loud music, I guess.
Yeah, just music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, even with the bands that we play with, like, most of the time in New York, we're playing with probably more, like, indie bands, you know, whatever that really means. And then, you know, but I think that there's certainly, like, an energy and agency and a certain, like, mentality that probably goes along with being in a, you know, punk band. But I think that's some of the most, like, punk bands in New York don't necessarily play punk music. It's more about, you know, kind of like engaging in that community of people who are, you know, putting on shows because they love it and supporting their friends and, you know, supporting friends who are doing things that aren't music related. It's, you know, I guess more of like the...
like a set of beliefs.
Yeah, a set of beliefs and a community orientedness and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that whole, you mentioned like punk and indie rock. Yeah, I have no idea. I feel like it makes, the distinction really makes no sense. And if you just even try to start to explain it, you just sound like an idiot.
Right. It's like, what is it punk because it's like faster or louder, or what makes the punk thing punk? And I'm sure that there's some people that are, you know, very strictly purist about that, but I don't
just
think...
want my indie rock.
Yeah.
Keep me away from that punk stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, it's so brash.
And we could talk about punk and pop punk, but we should not even do that.
Well, we could.
Yeah. If you want to.
Yeah. Pop punk's great, too. Defend pop punk. I don't know.
Defend pop punk. Right, so is Blink-182 the reason I bought a guitar?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were fun. I listened to them. That was about as punk as I got in high school. Which is, you know, I don't know to say that's punk at all. It is kind of punk, I guess. I don't know. But I just wanted to play... music. I was playing surf rock before we did Big Ups.
And that's the other thing. Mm-hmm. We were like the Brendan and Amar and myself, we were in like a surf rock, instrumental surf rock band. And
Aaron and the Birds.
Correct.
That's right. Internet.
Yeah.
These things are preserved, yo. These things are out there.
We did that. And I don't know, playing that kind of music, that's pretty punk, pretty pop punk. I feel like when you're playing like a instrumental surf song and you like think about it and you're like, this is basically a Blink-182 song. Yeah. Like it pretty much has all the, you know, like same like chord structures and patterns and stuff like that. It's fast. You're not like singing about, you know, getting like dumped or whatever. It's just there's just no singing instead.
So at what point did it turn from Aaron and the Birds to Big Ups?
Well, one of my good friends, Nick, in the band Space Wolves, who was fronting Aaron and the Birds, left New York. And around the time that stopped, Joe and Amar had been doing music stuff together, right?
Yeah. We played like in your apartment a few times, but that was also very kind of different music. That was like trying to be like a ponytail ripoff band.
Yeah, just Dustin Wong.
And then I kind of don't even know how it started, like, Carlos was playing with you guys or something.
Joe sent us a message being like, hey, I wrote these songs. Do you guys want to play some shows playing these songs? Who should we get to play bass?
Yeah, no, got Carlos.
Big mistake.
And then, I just played drums, and that was kind of it, because I played drums in Aaron and the Birds.
Yeah, it was basically kind of like, I think it was the same, about the same time that
it was the same summer.
Yeah, Nick was left, and then I think I just had a lot of fun playing those shows, and that was certainly like Nick's thing. That was his baby, so like we couldn't keep playing that, so we started a new band, you know.
Yeah, let's play an old song. This is Goes Black.
I can't remember what happened yesterday, the day before, anything, at any rate, anyway. I think what I'm trying to say is I don't want to live a life like this. What happens when all goes black and I'm lying there dying and I'm trying to think back? And I can't seem to contract anything and the fear consumes me and it starts to lose me. What happens when it all goes black and I'm lying there dying and I'm trying to think back? And I can't seem to contract anything, no!
So at some point it seems like, from what I can piece together, the band transforms from something that's based around like playing parties, playing shows for your friends, to towards actually like making it more of a big part of your lives. That's what I'm picking up on.
Yeah.
Totally. I'd say that's true.
Yeah, and I guess maybe around when the first album came out, like doing press and all that goes into that.
We didn't really do any press before that album came out. I think that just kind of happened all after. It was kind of strange. We got a Pitchfork track right up. And then just kind of there's emails that just came in, and we're like, oh, okay,
like we didn't really know how press worked, and you know that you had a PR person who would pitch your tracks to people, and that was the first time that we'd had that happen for us. Like, we had somebody working on that record, mm-hmm. and you know, learning how that all goes.
Yeah, I think in terms of taking it seriously, I think it was kind of when I, like, for me, when I think it was when we started recording that record, mm-hmm. because we got, like, Dead Labor, the label that put that out, sort of Derek, who runs that, he asked us to make a record, basically. I don't think until at that point we had ever, like, consciously gotten together and been like, we should make a full-length record at some point. You know, it was sort of, Derek was like, I'm starting this label. If you guys were to put out a full-length record, I would put it out. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think that maybe in the back of my mind, I thought that we would maybe do a record, but we hadn't really ever talked about it,
yeah.
You know? And so that was like, all right, we went into the studio and we recorded this record, and it was like, that record, like 18 Hours of Static, it has like a song on it that was on a 7-inch that we'd already put out because we didn't really like have enough songs,
yeah.
You know, like it was like,
no bonus again, tracks. I guess.
Yeah. And then like, we
didn't have the iTunes bonus tracks on that one.
No.
Well, the iTunes deluxe exclusive.
Here it is, the same song again.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Got ya.
Curveball.
And, like, you guys went to Europe playing that album. Like, I was watching, there's a video, a pretty well-edited video, maybe you guys did it, with Pukkelpop, the festival in Belgium.
They did that.
They did that, and okay. That was amazing.
Yeah.
We got that DVD.
You had a DVD.
When we got off stage.
Yeah.
Like, it had already been edited. Yeah. Like, I don't know. They run a great, I don't know, Pukkelpop in Belgium. They, whoever's amazing. Their video team, great job.
Wow.
They did it
Kudos.
So fast. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
cheers.
Like, they put it on a screen while you're playing, and then they're just like, here's exactly what was up there.
Yeah.
So,
wow, artists go play Pukkelpop. I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah, do it if you get a chance. It was fun.
That was the biggest show we've played to date, too,
yeah,
I think.
That was, oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know it's for people listening, it's kind of difficult listening to a podcast trying to process a video, but you should definitely check out the big upset of Pukkelpop on YouTube. And for reference, if people do watch the video, what was the crowd like? Because you can't really see too much of it. Like, how big? What was the vibe like?
It's in a tent that fits 6,000 people.
Oh, shit.
And it was maybe, like, half full until it started raining, and then it filled up much more. And then, you know, people are there.
I remember after the show, you sold merch, like,
behind
he's
the
just like, he's like, I'm going to sell merch right there, and he just points to the corner of the stage, and then we did really well, so I think people were into it.
People seemed very into it.
No, that was the thing. I think that personally playing for a crowd like that, that was the first time that we had played for that many people, and it was a little intimidating, but then also kind of seeing that it was just kind of like this mass of people, it was kind of less intimidating almost. Like, there was like, all right, this is like there obviously are individuals in the audience, but from the perspective of being on stage and being like, okay, it's just a lot of bobbing heads or something.
Yeah.
And then, when I did focus on people, it was a very supportive crowd. And
definitely.
I guess it was interesting, like, because I've never really gone to that many music festivals, but always the impression that I got of music festivals is that it's not about who's playing, it's more about the experience. But it, in a way, like, that was the thing that was really cool about that show, is that everybody who was there obviously wanted to kind of watch us, and because it was early, maybe except for the people that got rained on. But
there were enough people there before it rained that it seemed like that.
Yeah, that was like a very surprising thing for me, and I was like, okay, I actually don't mind playing this kind of show. It was cool.
it's also kind of strange because it's like the most space on a stage that you ever have. Right? Like, what do I do? Do I walk around like back and forth?
Like I'm like 30 feet away from Carlos.
Yeah, usually it's like there's play these tiny stages or Joe's running into us and like
love being. But on here a now drum it's
like
platform.
You like how do people do these giant like stadiums and arenas and you like have to do a show like.
I feel like a lot of big, like if you're in U2 or something, each member is such a star that you like want your own space to the stage, like you own right. that.
Don't come near my space.
Yeah. I mean, Brennan had a drum riser that they rolled off stage.
Yeah, I love so the drum cool. risers, although I was like spinning at that show, but yeah. still. Yeah, that was.
Oh, that was that show, that's right.
Yeah, that was like an hour vertigo. Before it started, I started getting like severe vertigo. But it's cool, we pulled it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that makes me think, like, Joe, with your stage persona,
yeah,
you're fun on stage.
I try to be.
Yeah. where does your persona come from? Like, where do you tap into for that?
Well, I think that part of it is like, watching people who are good at it, like, when I was growing up. Because I think that when I was younger, I saw a lot of, like, concerts that were sort of bigger, and then, bigger rooms and bigger stages and stuff like that. I didn't quite feel that connection. And then I started going to a lot of shows that were way smaller and with bands that I didn't really even know. Like there's a really big music scene in Baltimore when I was growing up, and kind of being exposed to that made like humanized the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I saw that like these people that were playing music were just people, not like this band is a beast unto its own or whatever. So I think that like going to shows and seeing that people are just people and that they're being themselves or perhaps exaggerated versions of themselves, and it's, I don't know, that was like inspiring. But then also there is on the other side of the coin, there's like the aspect that it is a performance, and so mm-hmm. that's another thing that I think tap into. It's weird. I feel like recently it's. I'm like more. I'm trying to figure out exactly like how to engage in the best way, because I don't know. There's like so many front people, and how do you find your own like voice and way of delivering and stuff like that. But regardless, I think the important thing is like trying to make it. Fun, trying to make it an experience that is more than just going to see a show, that you realize that as an audience member that you're participating in it just by being there, and that it is you're not just watching, it's something that's happening and you're there, and we're there playing with you, I guess, in a way. That's probably not the best way to word that.
You're
but
playing our instruments.
You, the audience members, are playing our songs. No.
Yeah, exaggerated version of yourself. When you said that, that sounded really interesting. Because it makes me think of like, like just ramping up whatever your personality is, and whenever you're singing or like playing your instrument, like that's who you are on stage. That sounds really interesting.
Well, I think that especially in terms of when we play, like, there is a certain boldness that comes from it, being like, all right, I have all this adrenaline, and an air of confidence that's like, well, this is what we do together, and we have a lot of like fun, and we care about it a lot. And so from that, just like, it makes me want to do, I don't know, perform well, I guess, and make it a good experience for everybody that's there. And I think that there are times where that, because of that energy and excitement that comes from that there is sort of like this, I don't want to say like unfiltered, but I'm like way more willing to, I don't know, let loose when I'm
yeah, you got,
performing.
You got like moves on stage.
Yeah. I like to
like
dance.
You shake it, you dance.
I like to dance.
You kind of, I noticed because we were talking before, the last time I saw Big Ups was recently opening for Bully and for Metz.
Oh yeah.
Music Hall. And you kind of have like a scoot across the like jumping like from side to side across the stage.
Yeah, cool. I'll remember that's the move that sticks out. I'll be like, all right.
I never know what he does up there.
Never, yeah. I don't know what you do either, because my back's facing you.
You know, we do this thing together, and meanwhile, we just have no idea what's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, for all I know, I could turn around, and it's just like, you're just pressing play on a drum track of an iPod, and then I'm like, what?
That only happens half the time.
And you guys have been mentioning seeing Future Islands a while back. I bet watching them perform, especially Samuel, that can be really inspiring.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that, I think, for me, specifically as, like, someone who does, like, front person thing, was very much an inspiration, just, like, yeah, he gives it his all and puts so much emotion into it and makes it, and it's a performance. It's, like, it's not a passive thing where, you know, someone's just going up there and playing the songs, like, the songs are playing through him, you know, so that's a part of it.
Yeah, I feel like that show especially, too, it's, like, such a nice little synecdoche of influences, like...
Oh, the show at Death by Audio?
Death by Audio, because it was, like, Smarts, where it's, like, this guy who, like, kind of makes himself as small, but also as, like, big on stage as possible at the same time, and Double Dagger, where it's, like, very, like, him emoting, but, like, you know, just very unfiltered, I don't know, and then...
Yeah.
Future Islands, it's kind of theatrical and interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that all three of those bands have front people, or Baltimore front people that are big influential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When was the earliest any of you saw them? Because I'm just interested what they were like way back.
Future Islands?
Yeah.
Joe, I mean, worked with them. And
yeah, I saw them in 2007.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The first time I saw them was in a parking lot. Well, it's like it's sort of an alleyway behind this gallery that I don't even know what it's called now, but it used to be called Load of Fun Gallery, and so it's this festival in Baltimore called Wartscape that was sort of making fun of the city-sponsored art festival that happened every summer.
Which is called what?
Artscape.
Oh, okay. All right. I was thinking it was that, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah. So, so that was the first time I ever saw them, and I think later talked with them about that, and I think they said that was one of their earliest shows they ever played in Baltimore, so it's pretty cool. Pretty cool experience. Just kind of stumbled in there with some friends. I had no idea what I was getting myself into, and saw them, so, yeah.
Cool. I feel like I want to get back to the new album a little bit. Let's play another song. This is National Parks. Yeah, on the first album, you're very direct about the things you're criticizing and critiquing about society and consumerism and how a lot of things are disposable. It's very direct. It's like when people are listening, like they know what's up. Do you think that is the same way on this album? Do you think that's changed at all?
I think that has changed, and I think that was, in terms of how I was writing, I think that was a very intentional change because, I don't know, I think that... being like so didactic about things, it never really even occurred to me that the lyrics on the first record were so direct. I think that there's also certain songs that people really latched onto, like in the media, saying you talk about like Disposer, that song, the song that you're talking about, disposable things, and there's other songs on that record that I think that are more vague, but I definitely wanted to try to at least lyrically go for a more poetic approach so that the songs would perhaps have more interpretations than even what I could have thought of. There are, you know, it's actually funny that like the songs that we kind of chose for the singles for this record are not those songs. We kind of like chose like the songs that have very explicit meanings, but I think a lot of the other songs on the record, like while there is like a thematic tie in it, that they are written intentionally with more vagaries. Is that a word?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It sounds like a good word.
So, you know, that they have meaning to me personally, but hopefully can be more evocative than just what the simple language there is. It's definitely an exercise in learning to be a better writer or a different kind of writer. So, yeah.
At the heart of it, though, what things were inspiring you to write lyrics?
A lot of experiences day to day. Like, there's so many things that are kind of like, I don't know, like there are things that are very specific, but are just kind of like smudged into something that I think people can relate more to. Like, there's songs about specific friends of mine on the record, songs about family members, but the bigger overarching theme is about personhood and the self, and like, you know, how a person's like conception of themselves helps them to understand how they are in society and like function in that way. So that was sort of a big inspiration. Like, you know, there's a lot of poetry references on the record about like Walt Whitman, and
that's the title, right?
Yeah, the title is taken from Song of Myself. So once again, about the self. So
Before a Million Universes, the title.
That's about. It. Correct. Yeah. So yeah, it's about identity. It's about personhood. It's about individuality and how those conceptions fit into something bigger, into society. How like one person can be part of something bigger, basically. Hmm.
Would you say at all you write like love songs? Does that come into play?
In a way, I don't know. Like dedications, I would say, perhaps more than love songs, but they're expressions of love in other ways. You know, not so much like a traditional love song, but like, this is for you.
Yeah.
This is for, you know, this idea. This is for this person. Yeah.
Yeah, I ask because I think for a lot of songwriters, it's kind of the opposite, where it's very difficult for them to write a song that's not about love. It's just sort of like a default setting. And with your music, it just seems like it's interesting because there's so many other things explored where it seems like, that's not really like something that's explored much.
Yeah. Maybe the next album will be a bunch of, what is it, 69 love songs, right? Yeah. Magnetic Fields. maybe we'll write some love songs. I think it's about time. Might as well write a love song. In terms of writing stuff, it's like, I want to, I think that all of us kind of want to just do it, like I said, do what feels right. Like, no limits. Maybe it will be some love songs in the next thing that we do, or I don't know.
Yeah, and another thing, I've heard you guys say in interviews before that you don't want to be called a political band, that you don't exactly want that.
I don't think that that's necessarily true. I just don't. Well, I think that for me personally, I will hope that people would realize that it's more than a political band.
Okay.
That there are songs that are inherently tied to politics and you know, what we do as a band is you know, political too. You know, like there's, but I think that that's only part of it. And yeah, I think to say that we're not a political band is not true, but to say that we're a political band is also not true.
Like, because I think
we're a band that writes songs about lots of different things, and sometimes the songs are political in nature and sometimes they aren't. That's just how it is.
And I think people hear political bands, or just they hear political and they just think of elections or presidents or just things like that. And, you know, there's a certain, like, whackness tied into just, like, writing, like, you know, Rock Against Bush or something. But what you're saying is, like, politics, which is true, like, are tied into everything. They're just, like, life.
Definitely, yeah.
We're writing about experiences that, you know, it's just the things that we are experiencing. And in that way, it may sometimes be political.
Yeah, I think that's almost, like, the easy tag is political.
Yeah.
People just kind of latch on to these are about something. As opposed to, like you said, love songs. So.
Right, yeah, and then going back to talking about crafting a narrative for the band, like, it's like...
Yeah, totally.
It's like, all right, this is a political band, and yes, there are moments where and there's songs that are about it, but are about political things. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think Brendan just put it best in saying that it's about life, and there are times where things that are part of a political structure can really change your life, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah.
And realizing that yes, that like politics are tied up in so many different things that it's kind of a lens in which you can look at things, and I think that sometimes in terms of the lyrics, what happens, it is a political lens, and there's other times where it's kind of stepping back from that a little bit. So, yeah.
Do you find yourself sometimes having to come together to make band decisions on, like, would we play this festival or this venue? Would we, like,
all the
have
time.
Our music used for this?
All the time. I mean, in terms of decision-making in general, I think as a band we are as, not to sound political, as democratic as possible. But it's, you know, I think that we've always been conscious of each other's opinions, and we always want to stay on the same page and make sure that whatever decisions we are making are something we are all okay with. So I think there's careful decision making with all of us.
Yeah, I think that. And then sometimes we make decisions that maybe other people from the outside might think, like, may not agree with, but it's very much about, you know, everything's very well thought out. Trust that.
Okay.
So.
A lot of emails.
And when you say everything, is it basically just what I said with, like, shows and how your music gets used? Like, what is it? What are these actual things you guys hash out?
I mean, even opportunities to who we're gonna, you know, like what kind of press opportunities we're gonna get. We got something, I don't want to like name it like by name, but we got offered something, like some interview, and it was just like very apparent immediately. All four of us were like, we are not going to do that. You know,
it's like a hokey thing, and you know, you don't want your name attached to that.
Yeah, yeah, that's part of it. And then in terms of shows we want to play, if we know that there's a band or a show that has some kind of affiliation that we're uncomfortable with or something, I know that's not as specific as you probably wanted, but, you know, those are all things we consider.
Yeah, like, and I think that in the same way, it's like there's things that we do because we know that there are people who are involved that we're like, oh, this is kind of like, I don't know if this is like a good idea, and then you kind of see like, oh well, this person's like also involved with it, or like this band's playing, and you're kind of like, okay, like, you know, yeah, like, especially coming from like a community of musicians like we do, it's like you could kind of see how other people are gauging it and make decisions based on that as well, you know.
If you can give any details without naming names, what was like the weird interview? What made it weird?
I think it was gimmicky, you know. It was they clearly had this like idea that they wanted us. It was more, you know, it was less that had to do with us as a band or our music in general, and more of, wouldn't it be funny to hear these guys say some silly things?
Yeah, it was like a dumb pun type thing, you know. So,
and it's just, you know, it's not that that's, you know, I'm sure that's great for some people, and you know, some people say, you know, all press is good, but it's just, if we don't have to do that, or if we, you know, don't really necessarily feel like we want to, we're not going to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ooh, all press is good. That's a very loaded one.
It is. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's a vague statement as well, because not all press is good. That was a little bit of it. But just, you know, what's the saying? It's like, no. All, what do they say?
I think that is. Isn't that a saying?
All publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, people say that. Yeah. There's no bad press. It's attention, and you know, I'm sure this maybe. Maybe if we did that thing, somebody would listen to it and be like, yeah, I love this band now because they're funny, but I don't really care if we, you know, if they think we're funny or not. If they,
yeah, we got a Twitter.
Yeah, you guys got some jokes on Twitter.
Exactly. Exactly. If you really want to get to the humorous spirit of Big Ups, just go on Twitter.
Do you guys all submit to the Twitter account?
To an extent.
Yeah. Who's got the Twitter fingers?
I think it's mostly. It's me and Carlos.
Yeah. I stay away from the Twitters as much as I can.
We all have our personal Twitters, too, for other less funny jokes.
Okay.
Or different jokes, you know?
Save the best jokes for the Big Ups Twitter account.
Sometimes.
Not all the time.
No.
What about just other releases, just things coming up with other artists? What are you excited for?
That is a good question. I'm trying to, I'm so out of the loop when it comes to like what's coming out. Like, I don't know. I feel like I find records like 2 years after they come out. I'm like, oh, this record's great. And everyone's like, yeah, I'm already listening to their third record.
Unless it's someone we're directly like
friends with,
they're talking to or seeing regularly. It's, you kind of forget what else is happening.
Is there going to be a Frank Ocean record anytime soon?
Man, he was supposed to release that last July. I don't know.
That's...
I would play that,
the first record in the van a lot.
So good. It's so good.
It's a good driving music.
Yeah. Great driving music.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited about the Porches record that just came out. I mean, that's not upcoming, but I've been... That's like perfect train music, I feel like. I'm like,
okay.
I'm like riding the subway a lot, and I just have like my earphones in. That's also another thing. I've only recently started listening to music while moving, like while like walking down the street.
Really?
I've never...
I like to be in a stable position when I'm listening to music.
I just got an iPhone like a year ago or something. So now I'm just figuring out how to like use technology in that way. But yeah, I think that walking around the city and listening to music is like a really crazy experience. I highly recommend that to anybody.
Again, like, listening to things a few years later, like
yeah, I know Walkmans have been around since before I was born. But
well, I was gonna say, back in the day, I had a really shitty Walkman where if you walked around holding it, it would just like break it with every time you took a step. The music would like.
To get that skip protection.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, 20 second skip protection.
Just wow. Like a little memory stick.
Just lasers.
Yeah, that was always the best. Like, will this jacket fit my CD player in a pocket?
Yeah.
You know?
I had one of those huge CD cases, like CD in wallets? My backpack. Those, like, huge. Like, that was the biggest thing in my backpack. And, like, before I walked home, I'd flip there and be like, what am I going to listen to today?
Totally.
Hybrid Theory, Linkin Park.
Yeah.
That's the record I'm the most excited about, is Hybrid Theory, Linkin Park.
Yeah, I've been listening to that a lot lately, and man, I really think Linkin Park holds up. Those first two albums especially.
I think Korn holds up really well too. Like, well, besides some of like the like, and more the sonics than the lyrics. I mean, especially because I mean a lot, some of the lyrics are just like actually nonsense, but like you know, like that. But shots I feel like that, like listening to Korn in 2016 and being like, what were they thinking? Like, this music is absolutely bonkers. Like, like it's like so, like the bass is like just clicky, and but also everything's like tuned down so low. It's so cool. I don't know. I feel like it'd be really cool if there was a band that like was playing like DIY shows in Brooklyn that sounded like Korn. Like,
has anyone listened to the dubstep revival. Korn record?
I would never listen to the dubstep Korn record. No,
you listen to that?
The dubstep Korn
right, because they claim that they invented dubstep.
That's a bold remember that claim. Story.
Yeah, I just like Untouchables. That was a good one. That has Here to Stay on it. That's my favorite Korn.
How do they
song.
Rank with Limp Bizkit?
Limp Bizkit, no thanks.
Well,
I'm done with it.
Limp Bizkit. Speaking of looking up videos after listening to hearing us talk about them on podcasts, you should go watch Limp Bizkit at Woodstock 99 when Fred Durst doesn't realize his microphone is off for a good like 10-15 minutes. And he's just talking to the crowd. He goes, is this on? Is this on? He's just yelling at people. Can you hear me? Is this on? It's hilarious.
It sounds great. Well, I'm pretty sure that I watched the Korn video from that same year at Woodstock.
Yeah, Woodstock the 99. Yeah, when people are like the crowd surfing on plywood
because
it's really muddy.
It's like a
it was muddy.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
I think that was historically actually a really terrible thing.
Right, people died.
Yeah,
a lot of people died.
So.
Guster played that one too.
Yeah, because there was like really bad weather and people were just going crazy in the audience because you had a bunch of bands like Limp Bizkit and Korn playing, which I don't think necessarily draws the best crowd, you know?
Right. So. There's like a video of Limp Bizkit just being like, let's tear this place apart. And people literally start tearing
the set fire
sound area apart.
You listen to Fred Durst when he says that.
I guess.
You have to question. You have to look at him and say, look, are you really my God?
Is this really the bridge I'm going to jump off?
Yeah.
But yeah, a Korn revival band playing around Brooklyn. That'd be cool.
I think it'd be cool, like, if, you know...
with more sonically. positive ethos.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, I can't really say I know much about Korn's ethos, but
or I meant more the crowd, not like being aggressive like that crowd.
Yeah,
we were talking
not like
about.
The Woodstock '99 crowd. No thanks. Yeah, I just think that they sound cool, like sonically. I can't really. Besides, like, I know that most of their songs are about feeling alienated, and but other than that, I can't really say much else about their ethos.
Man, have you guys heard the new Deftones? Were you into them?
Love White Pony.
White Pony's great.
White
record.
Pony's so good.
Yeah.
They have a new album coming out, though.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm trying to think of other records that I know are coming out that I'm excited about, but...
Oh, today, podcast today, is the release day for Gorillatoss' new record.
Oh, yeah.
Very excited about
DFA that. Records. Yeah, they're an awesome band. We've played with them a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about performance. They also are great performers, I feel like. Like always captivating and just so out there and weird. Yeah, great band, Gorillatoss.
Yeah, and you guys were talking about Downtown Boys earlier. I think they have a new album coming out.
Oh, really? This year?
That's awesome.
I think. Or they're at least working on music.
Sweet, yeah. Well, I saw them for the first time actually at Silent Barn, actually, I think right about the time as the podcast.
Yeah, I was there too with like Speedy.
Yeah, at that show, and they played Santa Claus is Coming to Town. It was awesome.
And it was about like surveillance, right?
Yeah, it's like he sees you when you're sleeping. Yeah, like wow. You're being watched. So,
Santa Claus is the government, I guess.
Yeah. True.
I feel you go really deep into that about like how he decides who's been good and bad and hands things out.
It's very fascist, right?
Santa Claus is just Big Brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anything else you guys want to touch on? I'm good.
I think we're good.
Yeah, I feel pretty good.
Cool. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Deirdre.
Boom.
Boom.
So yeah, that's it. Big ups. That's them. I had a really good time with that talk. Like we said several times, their album is called Before a Million Universes. It's out today. Check it out. And yeah, if you like the podcast, thank you so much for listening. First of all, I'm just so thrilled by all the feedback I get for this. I put a lot into this, so I'm always just very, very humbled when I see people getting into it and saying good things about it. If you want to subscribe to it, you can click the iTunes link towards the bottom of the story or just go into the podcast app in iTunes, search for The Alt in Our Stars. You can subscribe there. Like I said, star rating, good or bad, helps us out tremendously, so that's super appreciated. And also all the archived episodes we've had in the past, all available there. We run every Friday afternoon on billboards.com. So until next week, have a good weekend, everybody. Peace out.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.